Let's talk a little bit about MET exon 14, Jeff, and maybe you can differentiate the types of alterations that are seen and what kind of targeted therapy we have for this.
We've talked about MET amplification a long time. It's rare. It can be very targetable at baseline or at resistance, at EGFR resistance, at ALK resistance. You can see MET amplification. Certainly keep your eyes out for it. But it's kind of hard to identify. High amplification is probably targetable. Low amplification is kind of not. What about medium amplification? It's hard to know. And so right now, there are no drugs being actively developed for MET amplification. MET exon 14 splice site mutations are this newer class of mutations that are easier to sort of nail down when you have it and are now an active area of development. And there are two drugs that we hope could get FDA approval soon, capmatinib and tepotinib, both with high response rates, particularly in the first line setting. And certainly when you see these, you know, they are different, they're important, and they're very targetable. Drugs can work transiently. And so you can get a response, and then the cancer can surge back with like a crazy resistance mechanism, KRAS amplification, weird resistance mechanism seen. Alternatively, we've seen patients who can respond for a very long time. I definitely think it's worth treating these patients. You just need to be cautious that you might have a more transient benefit. And I don't think that's because the drugs are bad. They're good drugs. It's just a potentially aggressive biology, certainly worth testing for. I have used off-label crizotinib, but I think the newer, more potent MET inhibitors seem to have more compelling single-arm data.
So, Justin, any comments?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think MET in particular is a place where you have to be very careful with nomenclature. You know, saying MET positive is insufficient, just because, as Jeff mentioned, you know, MET positive can mean many, many different things. It can be MET amplification, it can be MET exon 14 skipping, and one could even think of MET IHC, but they're fundamentally different biologically, fundamentally different how we detect these. And this is also where, from a testing standpoint, NGS and specifically RNA-based assays are particularly helpful with MET exon 14 skipping, because there was a very nice JTO paper from a year or two ago where showing that there are literally hundreds of different mutations that can lead to MET exon 14 skipping. There are a few that are very well known, but they're sprinkled throughout MET. And so it can be hard bioinformatically, if you're just looking at a DNA-based assay, knowing whether this is one of 100 different mutations that can result in exon 14 skipping. Whereas if you use an RNA-based assay, all you're looking for is the transcript corresponding to exon 14. So that's why it's much simpler and is just more sensitive using an RNA-based assay. And that also speaks to the mechanism. The reason this is a driver is exon 14 encodes the Cbl binding domain that is responsible for the ubiquitin-mediated degradation of MET. So it's just another plug for knowing how you're testing and what your testing covers.
So can I just add one thing to that? Because I think this fits into that, but also to the others. And that's the issue of when you get a report back on NGS, it often lists more than just the driver. It lists those VUSs. And that can be very confusing sometimes. And I just brought it up, as Justin mentioned, with MET, there are a lot of different mutations that can lead to the actual exon 14 skip. But there are others where it's a gene we recognize the name of, but the actual mutation might not be one that behaves in the way we think of. I mean,